Welcome to the Critical Few Actions to Improve Your Business podcast. I'm John Downes, and I'm here to help you cut through the overwhelm and prioritize what matters most to improve your business. Let's get started and discover the critical few actions that have the biggest impact. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Herman Mott, who was for many years an advisor for the Entrepreneurs Program, and prior to that held managing director roles within private, multinational and listed public sector businesses. I've known Herman for over 10 years and respect how he has helped many, many medium-sized businesses in that period. Herman, welcome.
Thank you.
Today, we're going to talk about the concept of DIFOT, delivered in full on time. I see it as almost as a magic number or a metric to manage the operational performance of a business because it measures how consistently we deliver what the customer ordered in full and on time. Or another way to put it is, how often are we delighting our customers and how often are we pissing them off? But first, Herman, tell me a little bit about your journey.
Yes, well, I started life as a mechanical engineer, and you build things, and before you know where you are, they want you to run them, and you end up running all the operations, and then you're MD, and you wonder sometimes how you quite got there. But so I've been very fortunate. I've been across a lot of industries and ended up running, as you mentioned earlier, multinationals, Fortune 500s and listed, ASX listed companies with sizable revenues in the hundreds of millions. So that was a bit of my background. And following that, I'd never done consulting. I always felt it was all care and no responsibility. You do as an operational person, of course. Anyway, I got roped into this because I decided to retire. I had three goes at it and failed dismally. And so with one of them, it was a very high-end consultancy, which really only worked at the top end of the market because they were the only people that could afford us. But it put significant EBIT contributions and revenue increases to those businesses. And if we didn't hit the targets that we designated in terms of improvement, there was no bill. Mm. So this doesn't allow any room for flab, and it's very much about delivering in a specific time. So with that, they wanted me to go to the States, which I wasn't prepared to do. I'd done a lot of time there in the past, and it wasn't really for me. So I thought I'd get out of that, and then that Entrepreneurs Program came along. So I was very fortunate to join that group right at the very start. And I was there for 16 years, believe it or not. Yes. I thought I'd retired in my early 60s. But anyway, so, you know, I got involved with that and had the pleasure of working with over 400 SMEs across all industry sectors. I even got into high fashion, would you believe, with people in that area. And but overall, we were able to work with them. I met a lot of really clever, creative, entrepreneurial people. Some we were in a position where we needed to really help them out of major trouble, and others we just helped them on their way to success, you know. But typically, on average, on those 400, we typically were able to improve revenue about 35%. And EBIT contribution, earnings before interest and tax, the jingly stuff you keep in your pocket, we were able to increase that much further. And that was really to ensure they had sustainability to go on, because it's pretty tough in business these days. And you've got to be on top of every part of it, unfortunately, to survive.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. So, Herman, in the context of medium businesses, what is DIFOT from your perspective?
Right. I think it's a catalyst to help you to be successful, and in a way to differentiate yourself from your competition. So DIFOT stands for delivered in full on time. That doesn't mean when somebody gives you an order with three items in, you've done a great job when you deliver one. You've got to deliver all three. And they've got to be in top class condition, delivered when and how they needed it. I see that as the real catalyst, DIFOT.
And so, Herman, how have you implemented it in your business, that, you know, that business that went from 18 million, I think it was, to 230 million in 12 years? That's doubling every 3 years.
Correct. That's a...
an industry.
Yeah, that's a 25% compound growth rate on the revenue. Yeah. But the basically that business, the EBIT, earnings before interest and tax, was quite a high negative figure. And the deal was either fix it or close it, so we were able to fix it.
Yeah.
It meant looking holistically across the whole business. There was nothing singular to look at.
So take us through that.
Yeah. So look, to start with, it was a very high-tech business. You know, we were coating silicone, which is a liquid, onto paper, typically 2 meters, a meter and a half to 2 meters wide, that we were coating 0.75 of a gram per square meter, mm-hmm. and we couldn't miss a pinhead. So, and we were running at speeds of 300 to 500 meters a minute. So quite involved to be able to do that,
yeah.
engineering-wise as well as operationally. So quite high tech. But we had to look at the whole business. And the industry was very arrogant in the way it really dealt with the clients, but they were able to get away with it because that was a standard. Mm. So from the time of order to the time of receipt could be 2 to 3 months.
Right.
We were a distant number three in the market, and our strategic aim was to be number one. That needed a whole lot of things to be looked at. Mm. And we looked at Six Sigma to start with. Mm. Now, Six Sigma, as opposed to Lean, this is my interpretation, the Six Sigma was more about finding a solution to a particular problem. Lean is about continuous improvement in whatever you do, not just in manufacturing, right across your business. So we, with Six Sigma, we pulled it apart, and basically we looked at the effects of, I suppose you'd say, efficiency versus effectiveness. So a lot of businesses focus totally on efficiency, sadly. But if I could put this in an analogy, if you moved something very efficiently from position A to position B and then to position C, you can feel very happy with yourself. But if it was originally meant to go from A to C, there's a huge gap that you've missed out on. Mm. So that's where we actually focused on what was it that the market needed. And that's why your introduction about the delights or the pissing off of businesses, I think, is the catalyst for that. So we put ourselves in the client's shoes. What did they want? If you think about this, 2 to 3 months between placing an order and getting it, the real world for those clients was they had to carry a heck of a lot of working capital in the form of inventory because of our inadequacies to supply.
Mm.
They also needed premises of a decent size to store this stuff.
No.
And goodness me, if a product that they needed hadn't been ordered and that opportunity came in, they lost it because they couldn't get hold of the material. So we looked at that and came up with a solution, which we couldn't introduce straight away because it needed a lot of planning. But we had distribution centres in every capital city in Australia and in New Zealand. And essentially what we did was to look at being able to take, you know, the 80-20 rule of your products is 20% of your products sell 80% of your business. So we looked at that 20%. And we looked at it by each location because they were all a little bit different. So they had different ABC type analysis.
Yeah.
So what we did, we decided that we would make those products in a form that we would ship as needed to each of these destinations. And we went through all of the material movements, stocking needs, et cetera, to get the right inventory turns for that. And also to work on the growth that would come from what we were about to do. Because essentially what we did then with those 80% of the business 20% of the products type things, was we went from this 2 to 3 months to be able to say to them, order in the morning, we'll deliver that night or earlier.
Wow. Now,
it's a quantum of difference. That's... And we've never been too keen on little incremental steps. You've got to make a hit. And we did this. It took us a year to put the right machinery in place, train the people, all of this stuff. It wasn't 5 minutes. We also had to work with our suppliers. And basically, we got the suppliers to realize the growth potential. And we worked some stocking requirements from them for raw materials so that our total inventory holding and value was still kept within acceptable controls. So the working capital of inventory was fine. And we tidied up the other end, which is debtors. And then we implemented and we went, not quite overnight, but good grief, within about 3 months, we were number one. Can you imagine what difference that made to our clients? And this is why I say you've got to put yourself and forget that you're producing things. The outcome of this is, are you satisfying your clients? Are you delighting them, if you like?
Yeah.
And if you're not, or you're not quite there, you're losing an opportunity for growth. And you're losing the opportunity of alliances with those key clients, which is going to mean that you'll keep them because you become an integral part of their business.
Mm.
But the steps of this, John, was we couldn't do all that at once. So we started with improving the efficiencies of what we did. So that was from, you know, basically looking at the materials to processes to service, material flows, the efficiency of our equipment, and then the improvement of profit. Because, you know, profit's not a dirty word. Otherwise, you're working busy poor. That's not really very helpful.
No.
What it meant for us was that we had to relook at the way we measured things. If you don't measure what you're doing, you never improve it because you have no datum to work from.
Yeah.
So we changed what is commonly called cost of goods sold. Now, different people do it different ways. Many people just put the cost of material in as their cost of goods sold. They take that away from the revenue and they're left with GP. Sadly, though, that doesn't tell them how efficiently they've made something because it all drops down to the expense line and is averaged over everything.
Yeah, it's ignores direct labor for its start.
Correct. So we restructured this to cover materials, depreciation, labor, material utilization, and equipment. And we monitored waste. They all came into that. And the indirect expenses or the indirect people associated, you know, your engineers and all of those people associated with keeping this equipment going, producing this finished cost, were all loaded in there. So when we came down to the GP line, yes, we'd reduced it, but those costs that were dumped, if you like, into expenses were all up in that top line. And that meant that we could measure them. And what we had to do was start looking at every individual product with that cost structure. And then we'd look at how efficiently we were making it. And more importantly, how could we improve that efficiency to ultimately reduce the cost of goods sold, improve the GP, and hopefully that would then filter down as it would to your earnings before interest and tax.
Mm.
Methodology. Look, it isn't just for manufacturing. It isn't just in the operational area. We applied it to below the line expenses. So in other words, your common expense line. And I think anyone would relate to the fact that when you look at the expense lines, probably two areas which don't necessarily get the same attention, but are just jumbled into there,
yeah,
is sales and marketing expenses. And I think everyone would look at their business and say, you know, there's two or three clients that take one heck of a lot of our time to service.
Yeah.
And all gets lost amongst the people that run efficiently, unless you go in, you don't have to change your chart of accounts there or anything, but you just need to understand where you're spending your time. And then you start to say, how can we do it better? Yeah. And you start to even look at the way your salespeople operate. Are they asking the right questions? I mean, it's great to have a cup of tea with people. Wonderful. But what information are they bringing back that we can be better suppliers to their client?
Yeah.
And make sure that we're aware of their opportunities and where they're going, what their capacity and capability is. So we restructured that. From the administration point of view, I mean, there's some clients that don't pay on time. Well, they're a cost. Yeah. They're a cost because your people are chasing them up, and they're a cost because you're bankrolling them. There's others that do the right thing. You're actually making more money from those people. So you need to understand that profile of who's actually delivering what. So when we looked at the operational side, we also looked at changeovers. And just to give you one example, we had a piece of equipment that was an integral part of our manufacturing process. And to change over from one size product to another was 3/4 of an hour. Mm. We did this over a 24-hour time frame, about 4 times. So, you know, you start looking at that's 3 hours down the drain. So we re-looked at the engineering of this, and we actually, it was quite clever actually, but we, and it cost quite a bit of money to do it, but I'll give you the result. The result was from 45 minutes, we went to 3.
Wow.
Now, the first thing, so we'll be able to change over quickly. That's great. It's going to be less in cost, but it's much more than that, because by changing over more quickly, we were able to do shorter runs, improve the control on our working capital, and more importantly, feed the market more quickly in what they needed rather than being governed by economic order quantities.
Yes.
So, you know, these are just some of the things that came out of all of those sort of processes.
Mm.
And similarly, you know, on our sales and marketing side. And, you know, from that, and then the implementation of that, you know, the supply situation down to the order now and we'll supply it that day, we just grew like you won't believe. And so, you know, the revenue just started to multiply, and we used that model all over, and we expanded into Asia, Malaysia, Thailand, et cetera.
Yeah.
And we used the same model as that to do it. So it actually gave us a competitive advantage. But the secret to it was on the lean side to continuously look at improving DIFOT performance.
Yeah.
Was that you had to measure everything. So we measured everything in terms of the manufacturing and the activities we did to the logistics, moving products out and all of this.
If you really want to kick off your strategic planning and work in a supportive environment with other CEOs and leaders, the CEO Masterclass in Strategic Planning and Implementation is for you. This 10-month small group course helps you craft your strategic plan, present it to a group of peer investors, and develop a habit of monthly implementation. Our waitlist is open now at criticalfewactions.com.au.
And so how did you manage the DIFOT as a number?
As a number?
As a well, to the business, really.
Correct.
From sales and marketing right through to
right
cash, I guess.
Now, there's a metric that was always used, John, that if you get over 95%, it costs you more to hold that level of inventory that it actually, the numbers start to work the wrong way for you.
Yeah.
The challenge is that if you can improve the efficiency and and reduce the manufacturing size required, that's still at an acceptable level of production cost, then you can pull it up. So we were sitting on just under 98% DIFOT. It was a very, very good number.
Mm.
But you're always eating away at it, trying to improve. And for example, we used programs like Cognos and that. We had some pretty sophisticated mainframe software. The problem with this is it wasn't very good for sales and marketing information. It was designed by accountants.
Mm.
But it wasn't so good at speediness of giving you variances to what had been produced. So we used a program which clipped over the top of this called Cognos.
Yeah.
And you would set the parameters. So if something was produced, let's say, 2% out of cost, it flagged.
Yeah.
And when I came in the morning, I had 12 divisions. I could see little traffic lights there. I could go into that and I could drill down to the actual transaction. Then you could follow up what happened. So you want to know the ones that go very well and you want to know the ones that aren't going so well. The ones that are going very well, how can we make that the norm? And the ones that aren't going very well, how do we rectify it?
Yeah.
So when we put together a revised process, and this is where a lot of people fail with lean, when you decide this is the way you're going to do it, you've got to build it into your cost structure and you've got to be managing that. And our operation was 24/7.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, human nature is such that you bring in a new way of doing things. And unfortunately, the afternoon and night shift might do things totally different to the day shift. Anybody that's run a manufacturing plant knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So
it's just not being managed the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're monitoring this output in that way, you start to see, why isn't this so efficient? You go back and you find somebody hasn't done it the new way. So you're always on top of those variances and just bringing it back in. And really, you look at the whole operation and you're constantly trying to improve and you've got to build that culture into your organization. I mean, you'd support a sporting team that didn't train. You wouldn't lose us. The trouble is business is division one. You may not get the chance to play again, where you probably get another chance on the football field. You know, so this is unfortunately the life of business, you know. But look, it's all interesting and it keeps you young and you can enjoy it. Mm. And the secret is we always shared the results with our people and the benefits, and you got to have time to have fun with people. Otherwise, you never get sustainability. And we always used to take time out to actually also thank the partners of the people that worked in our business because they often put up with a heck of a lot.
Mm.
And, you know, so these things that we really did were rocket science. You just sat down and worked through them. They're not complicated when you look at it.
Mm.
But, yeah, so to me, DIFOT is, you know, that's the final measurement. And, you know, just in the metrics, for example, you look at all of this and you look at lean and you start looking at how long does it take from when an order lands into the business? Does it actually get to the production schedule?
Yeah.
Because if it takes too long, it might mean an opportunity's lost to make it in a more easier run as opposed to not. So,
and also, I guess, from a sales and marketing perspective, you know, have we set the right expectations? What commitments have we made? Have we set ourselves up to fail DIFOT before we've even handed the order over?
Correct. Absolutely correct. I'll give you a little story. I nearly fell over when I heard this. But remember the old Kodak company used to make films?
Yes, I worked with Eastman Kodak.
Well, they had a system that they were measuring. And I thought, well, that's not a very good DIFOT performance. And then I discovered that was only referring to the order entry. Nothing to do with that. So, look, there's no rocket science with this stuff. You just got to go back to the basics and go through it. And, you know, a lot of the stuff you can get so tangled up in, you know, in the technicalities of it. But I think sometimes you just have to apply some common sense in this and realize what that means, you know.
And so what are the implications of adopting a DIFOT first approach from a financial perspective? Because, you know, some people would turn around and say, well, the easiest thing in the world is let's just build a truckload of everything. And then whenever the customer wants it, we'll just give it to them.
Absolutely.
Which would be a great way to go out of business.
Yeah, totally. And that's why people go out of business, of course, because they're not managing the two components of working capital.
Yeah.
One is inventory, the other is debtors. And, you know, when you don't manage those, and we've had some rising interest rates, but at earlier times they were higher, and you're looking at the cost of interest in holding it, you're looking at the cost of warehousing or storage to hold it. And the other thing that happens as you start holding more material, obsolescence turns up, whether that's in raw materials or whether that's in finished goods. Suddenly this product's not in vogue anymore. So this is where you reduce risk by tightening up those processes. You know, the Japanese have got a wonderful way. They don't increase warehousing space until the screams are so loud they're intolerable, right? So, and anybody that's got, you know, a couple of facilities, which they've expanded into two facilities, they know controlling those two facilities is harder than controlling one.
Yeah.
And it's the same when you let your working capital get out of control. Most businesses are failing on cash flow. And cash flow is directly related to inventory holding and debtors and profitability. So if you don't manage all of those, you suddenly find, you know, your cash is
evaporating.
Well, they say, you know, what is it? Revenues for show, profits for sanity, and cash is king. That's about what it mounts up to, you know. Yeah.
So when you moved from a 3 month or 2 to 3 month delivery time to same day.
Yes.
And you mentioned that, you know, you worked with your suppliers so that you didn't change your working capital position. I take it that they either had product on hand ready to go or they had consignment stock or had.
Yes, we worked with them. And basically, just to share this with you, I actually reduced the number of suppliers we had.
Yeah.
So what we did, that meant that they could get more turnover. And we shared with them our strategy. Mm. And we said, look, you know, we want you to come along. And these were quite large suppliers too.
Sure. Right?
So they ended up holding stock for us. We, so there was that value that was on their books, if you like. I always gave a commitment we would take this stock. It wasn't that they'd be left with it, right? But this was just more or less like working capital control. So this was off balance sheet, a large portion of raw material.
Yeah.
And we increased the balance sheet in terms of semi-finished and finished goods for the 20% of the slower moving items, right? So what that meant we were able to do is in the market, we could leverage the fact that we could supply this stuff so quickly that we could more easily do deals to also roll in the specialty items. So, you know, the profitability really shut up. In that particular corporation globally, we were the people with the best profitability.
So in that case, you're actually able to increase the size of your raw materials, which were actually being held by your suppliers, but you had given them a commitment that you would take it. So that didn't increase your working capital requirement.
Correct.
Inventory at the raw end, but you did actually increase your finished goods inventory so that you had greater capacity.
So we could manage that working capital number.
Yeah.
As the numbers went up and that growth, because growing at 25% per annum for 12 years, the biggest challenge is cash flow.
Yeah.
Right. And I'll share with you another thing we did to stay at the peak end of the market, hold that position. We had worked out that we needed 27% of our sales to be new products. Now, we defined a new product as a product 1 to 3 years old.
Right.
And that could be a modification of a product.
Mm.
It needed to be a new product.
Yeah.
That introduction of that material also needed to be handled from both the sales and marketing and operational side, because we needed to bleed out the one that was being replaced with the new one coming in, and not rocket science, but always tends to fail. And so when we looked at new products, we had a complete group that represented supply, purchasing, manufacturing, engineering, sales, marketing, technical. And I would say, you know, our marketers, we paid them a lot of money, but they needed to know the market. So they needed to know what that market wanted before they did. And this was from information gathering. And then we would work out, okay, what's this going to cost? And before we move forward, we'd do the costing. And we'd then go from the bottom up. So I'd go from the EBIT line up. So I want 18% EBIT. Now let's run this up to cost of goods sold. Oh, we'd never make it. Well, that's fine. We haven't wasted a whole lot of effort producing something that's never going to sell in the market. That isn't too clever. But let's go away and see what we can do. And it's amazing. And particularly as you limit your materials where possible and look at how you can use those materials to produce new products, then it makes it logistically much easier. And we would end up doing it. So we were constantly coming up with new products based on that theory, and it worked. So you never sacrificed your EBIT line, but by the same token, you didn't produce things that went into the market and then to find, oh God, they're not really, they're too expensive. Then people try and work away at the edges to try and claw back the cost. The client says, this product's not the same as the one you gave me. So what does that do to your credibility in the marketplace?
Yeah. So, have an acute ear for what the market wants.
I mean, I remember when we first did this, John, I actually got in touch with, for our logistics transportation, I got in touch with both Lynn Fox's company and Toll at the top. And I said to them, I said, look, I'm a manufacturer. I said, I'm not a person that needs buildings, but I have to have them. Can we work with you and utilize your space in each of these locations that we're producing or selling, the distribution centers? I said, and I'll give you all our line haul. I said, the only thing I need from you is the ability to deliver quickly in each of the capital cities and near regions. And they weren't ready to do that. They all do it now, but probably not for the size of products we had. But they'd all do it. You look at, you know, Lynn Fox is doing it now with Coca-Cola. They do the complete, you know, supply chain. And sometimes you've got to sort of look outside the square to what are the solutions. It keeps you young. And, you know, at the end of the day, this stuff has got to come back to the right results financially.
Yes.
Because the financials are the final scorecard in the business. And what you do is almost rhetoric if you don't get that sort of the right numbers and ratios there.
Absolutely.
You know.
So as we've talked about this, Herman, you know, the dominant discussion, although we've talked about DIFOT as being an output measure, the dominant discussion has really been around changing the way we do things, changing the way we analyze things, changing the way we think about things. So what do you think we need to do to prepare an organization to adopt a DIFOT approach, a DIFOT first thinking?
I think it doesn't matter how good your operation is. You know, you can be the most efficient thing. You need to be effective. It's a bit like the moving things from A to B to C, when really the target was get it to C.
Yes.
So
doing the right things and then doing the right things.
So you can be very efficient, but are you actually effective in the eyes of your client base? Just people that are going to pay you. So I think probably to start with is, depending on exactly where you are in the process, if you've got systems in place, if you've got standard costing or activity-based costing, start utilizing that and measuring it on time as it's happening. And today's technology, you know, with Industry 4.0 and, you know, the fourth industrial revolution, and we're now talking about the fifth one where we'll basically use artificial intelligence and machine learning to the next level, basically. You've got a lot of assistance you can put in at very cheap cost. Some of these sensors that record stuff, they're magnetic. You put them on and they're proximity related. They'll give you your numbers out. But if you can get that information, it's never any good in a manufacturing operation, in my opinion, going along after 24 hours trying to find out why something was so good or something was so bad. Everyone's forgotten about it. Yeah. So you've got to be quick. And if you're quick, you'll find out what is it that was so good or what is it that was so bad and how do you rectify it?
Yeah.
Important thing with rectification, and that's this process we're talking about, looking at everything, is to do it in a systematic, process-controlled way. So in other words, look at what you believe is the solution, be open to solutions, look at what can improve, document it fully out to make sure you've covered everything and that those involved in that, I'm talking about operators, fully understand and agree this will work.
Yeah.
Because you can't bring this stuff down from above. It's, the biggest knowledge base we've got are the people working at the shop floor.
Yes.
So we've got to harness that. And you say, well, yes, it'll work. Okay. Then you make the things that this is the new standard operating procedure, or SOPs as they call it.
Yeah.
That's the procedure to make that product. Now, depending on your level of sophistication in your facility, if you've got the equipment, you can build that into the process control of that plant to be able to feed that stuff and to make sure that happens. But even with legacy equipment that doesn't have that, you can still find the equipment that will enable you to do it at a relatively low cost.
Yeah.
And you can start harnessing that so you've got on-time information. Then when you're armed with the fact that, yes, this is the right way to go about it, and you implement it, you must link that to your cost base and you must be monitoring manufacturing operational costs against the standard, whether that's an activity-based cost system or a standard cost system, whatever. So none of it's really rocket science. And then, like most things these days, we can gather lots of data. It's terrific, but what the heck do you do with all this stuff? So you need... This is why we used things very simplistic, really, this Cognos, because that said everything that was in within the standards that we set to highlight if there was a variance. We don't need to know all about the good stuff. So thank you very much. That's exactly what we want. We want to know the variances. Stuff more expensive and less expensive. And how do we optimize the outcomes that we've learned from those two extremes? And that's where you need to do this. And one of the biggest failures of Lean has been where people have not linked what they're trying to do to the costing system. Because for the very reason I was mentioning earlier, standards and operating procedures, click. The old saying, when you tell something to somebody and then they tell the same story by the time you... It's a line. It doesn't recognize anything. It's a bit regional. So this is where you've got to lock that in.
Absolutely.
And how to lock it in is back to the financial analysis. So I know for some people, this, well, that'll be very hard. It's not so hard these days. You don't have to have the world's best software system. And there are lots of systems out there for 20 and 30,000 that will give you that type of information.
Yeah.
It'll even tell you if, these orders coming in, are they actually going to be able to be delivered on time?
Before you even get started. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that technology is there. And, most manufacturing people usually have a production rate with 2 or 3% up their sleeve, just for survival, really.
Yeah.
But you can look at that and say an operations or a production manager could look at that schedule and say, God, what does that mean? We've got to work overtime or something, and that's going to be problems. I think, okay, let's just change what I've given and use up my spare, maybe it's an extra 3 or 4%, change that number and it will remodel, and maybe it'll just say you don't need anything now, you can do it, but you need to maintain that.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you looking to pinpoint the areas that will make the biggest impact on your business? Check out the Organization Performance and Value Diagnostic. This powerful tool lets you evaluate your business on multiple facets and provides email reminders to keep you on track. Head over to criticalfewactions.com.au and get started now.
So, Herman, when looking at implementing DIFOT, what do you see as being the gotchas that you've got to look out for?
Well, the measurement's the key thing.
And what about the people?
Absolutely. Got to be part of the whole show. Mm. And as I say, you know, I was mentioning earlier about would you support a team that doesn't train? Of course not. And I think sometimes you've got to sort of get people to realise, and they do when you use those sort of analogies, that the competition is outside the fence or outside the building surrounds. Those people out there want to take your living away from you. Mm. So better be alert and be the best you can. So collectively, you're all going to be going along well, and usually reflected in the quality of the cars and the car park.
Yes.
But, you know, that to me is the secret. You've got to have the right culture, and you can't afford to let that culture slip, but you've got to enjoy the successes and share them.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, it doesn't work. You know, the people we had in that business, you know, we moved people up, people without tertiary qualifications, they went up. We used to pay for people to do their MBAs. I always used to say to our people at a university, you're here to learn and you need to link up with people that have got the practical experience on the floor. And remember, when you're talking, you're not learning. So listen and see how you can harness that. And then collectively together, you end up with a very, very strong team.
Mm, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. So, Herman, final question. So, what are your thoughts on what critical few actions a founder or a CEO should start doing tomorrow if they did nothing else to start their DIFOT implementation journey?
Yeah, very interesting, because we tackled the lot, right? It's very difficult to separate stuff out. But if you look at it from first actions, yeah. I guess the thing is to improve delivery performance, which is obviously going to be appreciated by your client, and to reduce cost of goods sold and improve EBIT as well, then you start looking at every one of your processes. Yeah. And if you do an 80-20 look at it. So in other words, look where you spend and lose the most time first. You know, the smaller stuff's important, don't get me wrong, but there's big chunks of things.
Yeah.
You might look at it and say, well, I know we've got a bottleneck in this area. It's always bottlenecking. Mm. And then in situations where people work overtime to fill the bottleneck, but the bottleneck doesn't clear.
No.
So you start to look at that. You say, what's there. These are some of the very basics. So
yeah.
I think sometimes you've got to walk the factory floor and find out what's working, what isn't. And you often find this by asking the people on the floor, what do we do?
Yeah.
And you'll find out things that they'll say, well, you know, it's always been like this. Well, what do we do? And you think, how did we ever miss this? But, you know, that's the facts of life. So if you can harness that, and you've got the right culture, these things, you know, it's not just your vision. You'll get the input from the other people as well.
And that's an important part of the brain's trust.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It is. I'll give you one thing which I learned. We had about, in the Melbourne factory, we had about 370 people. And I got this brainwave. I'd explain the strategic plan to them all. Anyway, when I finished, they all applauded, and I thought, oh, that's really good. I thought it was highly successful. Then I went around to a couple of the individual groups and said, how did you find it? They said, we didn't understand a thing. I said, well, why didn't you ask a question? They said, we're made to look idiots in front of 300-odd people. And I thought, you idiot. What had it been? We went into smaller groups, not rocket science. And the feedback we got, you know, was nectar.
Yeah, absolutely invaluable.
And we had to change a few plants because of it, because common sense was in there, which we had somehow missed.
Yes.
And so, you know, sometimes it's, you know, you can jump to conclusions, but you actually got to make sure you're talking in a language people understand, a bit like Shakespeare, you know. His plays could work for people at this level right down to here. It just shows you, really, you know.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Herman, as always, it's been an absolute delight to chat with you. I always learn something from our conversation. Thank you so much for sharing wisdom and your experience.
No problem. Thank you very much, John. It was lovely to talk with you.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Pure Actions podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and grab the downloadables from the show notes. And if you found this episode helpful, I'd really appreciate it if you share it with your peers and your team. Stay focused and take action. The Critical Pure Actions podcast, including show notes and links, provides general information only and is not individualized business advice, nor can it be relied upon as such. You must take responsibility for your own advice, decisions, and actions.